podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast, coming to you from Auckland today. We're a little bit warm under the bright studio lights, but the first crack, an integrated video podcast. It remains to be seen whether that will happen, but do check the YouTube channel if you want to see our faces as well as listen to our dulcet tones on your normal podcast provider. Tonight we are going to talk about another fantastic win for the Black Caps against Sri Lanka at the Basin Reserve. We'll talk some bits and bobs, India, Australia, Sophie Devine, and the proliferation of T20 white ball cricket going on all around the world, including, I think it's called Major League Cricket in the USA. All coming up on the Top Order Podcast. Stay tuned. So, boys, it seems to be a common theme at the moment. We've got to start with another New Zealand victory. Basin Reserve, pretty comprehensive win again. Henry Nicholls, I said it on the last pod, didn't I? Give him one game more than one game less. Probably the only prediction I've got right in my entire Top Order podcast career. But you must be pretty stoked, you Kiwi boys, coming into the end of a pretty jam-packed domestic summer. We've still a little bit of cricket to go. We've still got the white ball stuff against Sri Lanka, a couple of games at Eden Park as well, which will be nice for Auckland crowds who've been really starved of international cricket for a little while. But down to the Basin we go. Thoughts on that test match?
Oh, look, I never doubted the selectors. They were right, eh? Right all along.
You know that everything you say on this podcast is now on the internet in perpetuity,
yeah,
right?
Come back and bite you.
Yeah. Yeah, look, but I mean, it was kind of the classic New Zealand test win, right? The thing that we've been used to for the last 5 or 6 years. We've been going, okay, well, this team's coming to New Zealand, not one of the elite top three nations coming here. They're coming to New Zealand. This pitch will look very, very green. They'll see it and they'll go, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe we better bowl first. Mm-hmm. We'll bat for ages and then knock them over twice and win the game. And it was kind of, I don't know, just business as usual, although we kind of haven't seen that business for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. It feels like, you know, 3-4 years ago when we did that, regularly. The only day I actually got to see was that day where Kane Williamson and Henry Nicholls batted pretty much all day, and you guys know how much I love watching batsmen just bat. So that was very, very pleasurable. And yeah, I think we just go straight into that. What about the batting there from Kane Williamson and Henry Nicholls? With Kane, it's just incredible to see how much he dominates when he is on song. We've been missing that for maybe 18 months or so, but the last two tests, he's just looked absolutely unfallible.
And I think I think we might have said it when we were talking about kind of what was missing from the side, you know, a few months ago, and we were saying, you know, what, like, they were kind of not winning those big moments, and even last home summer we were thinking kind of what is it about this side, because the guys that have come in, like Blundell and Mitchell and the recent players that have taken over from Taylor and Watling and all those other players, but it was Kane all along. Like, it's Kane all along. He's the one that's driven our batting and driven these big scores. I mean, I pulled out some scores, some stats for him. It's 8,000 test runs now, 1,050 plus scores, 6 200s, and he's actually got one in the last five consecutive seasons. He's got a double hundred. Mm. So all of the last years, he averages 64 between 2017 and 2013, and now, with 1,400s in that time and just 38 matches. The highest batting averages in test wins, second only to Don Bradman. Bradman averages 130, which is kind of fairly useful.
Yep.
But Kane averages 81.5 in 40 test wins for New Zealand. That if there's any example of how important
a player is to their nation, yeah.
I feel like that's the one stat that you pull out every time. And, I mean, Bully, I look across to you with your magnificent facial hair going on at the moment. Kane's beard, I mean, it's, honestly. Doesn't shave very often.
Yeah, it's best beard in world cricket by far. The other stat that I pulled out the other day, now averages 54 in Test cricket, which for a New Zealander playing in New Zealand, in, as you said earlier, Raj, sometimes fairly bowler-friendly conditions is an exceptional performance. And no New Zealander has really ever got close over a long period of time to averaging 50, let alone 54, I mean, over an extended period. The other one that I picked up the other day, six, I think, double hundreds at home, which I think now is second only to, I think Bradman had seven double hundreds out of his 12 at home.
That might not be exactly right, because he got that double hundred in Pakistan.
Oh, so maybe he has five at home, and that's in the top four or five all time. So, yeah, you know, he's continuing to break records for New Zealand and proving to be, you know, the talismanic figure that we know he's been for many, many years.
I think, Raj, what I really enjoyed about watching those two bat is that those first two sessions, they actually kind of upped the ante, didn't they? They kind of got themselves back in, and then immediately it was like, okay, we're taking charge now, and it's sort of a style that we haven't done. You know, Kane, traditionally, I guess, in the last 12 months, we've almost been critical of him because he's been, you know, waiting to put the foot down, and then in this test it was like, I'm in now, it's game on.
Look, they paced it absolutely beautifully. They weren't reckless. They made sure that they stamped their authority. Sri Lanka, to their credit, did try things like, you know, got bowling short, bowling around the wicket. They probably just don't have the artillery to make that work, and when they tried that, we didn't back away from it. We actually went after them. Mm. They were making this commentary has been horrible on but we can leave that out. But they were talking about how Kane Williamson hasn't scored a six in a very long time, and he hit two back to back, and with that short theory that they were trying to employ. But I think the way that they batted was perfect. It's almost like they scripted it.
What about the run rate? Because I guess, I don't want to say that this is a bit of buzzball phenomenon, but 4.7 and over, the scoring rates across the whole summer in New Zealand have been good. We've talked a lot about the pitches, and I think, you know, you look at George De Bell, who loves a picture of a pitch 2 days out from a game where it looks like a bowls green rather than a cricket wicket. But good place to bat, really, isn't it? The base, and you've got to actually look probably upwards rather than downwards at the conditions. Was there a mistake at the toss, do you think, from Sri Lanka? I mean, it's the easy result to say would suggest that, right? But
yeah, kind of. It's easy to say that now. I think I don't know. I mean, you any side you turn up, you see the wicket that did. You're talking about 2 days out, even the day of the game. I think it looked very green, and
was softer than I think. It was softer than it looked as well, especially on day one, I think. So I don't have a problem with making that choice. Maybe just execution, I think, was probably lacking a little bit.
Yeah, I think if we look back at kind of what they did in that first test, they just didn't give us anything to hit. They made it so difficult for us to score. And as soon as partnerships built in this second test, New Zealand was just able to capitalise, because there were, those balls that Kane was hitting for six, they were short balls. They started to get into this rhythm of giving us, like, I think it was Lahiru. Lahiru was certainly way looser, I thought, in this test.
I praised him last week, and I think that might have been the reason for him.
Yeah, we talked about the Sri Lankan seamers, didn't we, and said how well we thought they actually bowled, and then, the bowling figures don't make pretty reading, do they, for that first innings?
No, that made me look a goose there, really, to be fair. But it's not the first time, won't be the last, fair enough.
What about Nichols? What do we want to say about him? Because I find this a really tricky conversation, because
because you're Will Young stock. Yeah, you know, there's an insider trading situation going on here, isn't there?
Well, no, there's not, because it just shows the amazing depth that we have in New Zealand cricket, doesn't it? That we've got a quality player like him sitting on the sideline. But I think it's more the fact that Nichols, I said it was a classic New Zealand test. That included Henry Nichols being dropped a couple of times in a home test. Mm. And it wasn't exactly vintage innings to start with. But once he got going, he did. He was very, very positive. I think that was the one thing that stood out. Sometimes he's another batter who tries to grind away. Mm. But as soon as he got to about 30 or 40, he was stepping away, cutting it through the offside. He was really trying to, it's not really hit your way out of it, but he was definitely trying to be positive, and, you know, maybe he thought, look, if I'm going to go down, if this is going to be, you know, a time for me, that then I'm going to do it in my way. And look, he did a great job, and I think that's what he's been able to do when he's gotten to these little slumps. When he actually gets dropped, he does usually cash in and get big scores, and it was a very critical score. But what do we do now?
Well, just on his innings, I actually think he played an incredibly good, you know, second fiddle role to Kane and supported that partnership. There's a batsman at both ends, fellas, so he did a great job in that partnership with Kane, and then finishing it off towards the end, you know, charging towards his double hundred. I was talking about this with a couple of mates yesterday. His test record is actually a very, very good New Zealand cricket test record.
Yeah, he's just 38,
Well, he's scored 900s now. It's something you don't really see in the New Zealand history of their batsmen anyway. But do I think that we have put out our best top order? Probably not. In that team, and you know, I didn't get a chance to express my Southey batting at eight feelings last week.
No,
we could leave that one alone. But I'm not sure that he is in our best top order. And it's hard to say that when a guy's just scored a double hundred, so it might be a bit harsh.
Oh, this is parallels with David Warner here, because David Warner scored the big double hundred on Boxing Day, but hasn't scored a run before or since in many, many bats. So I think there's a little bit of the, you know, diving judging to go on here. If you take the batter's best score and worst score out of a summer, and then you have a look at what lies in the middle, normally that's a reasonably good indication of what kind of form they're in. And in this case, Henry Nicholls, you take his best score and his worst score out, and you're not left with a lot. David Warner the same. So I think there's still a question of form there, but he has gone a long way towards answering, you know, some of his more stringent or more vocal critics, of which I am one of them.
Ask me why I think that top order isn't the best top order.
Why don't you think that top order is the best, Raj?
Well, I'm glad you've asked that. The reason I think that is I have a bugbear with Devin Conway opening the batting.
Yeah, I do too.
When there is kind of an open, let's do that with these little.
You can do that.
As many of those hand signals as you like.
There is probably an open spot there at number four, and I think that Conway would. It's a perfect Conway-sized gap there to fit him in, and I would just rather that he was batting there, and that's why I think that's the big sort of brick that makes our top order stronger, as him batting at four.
So that's Will Young to open, and then
Will Young or even even a Ruchin Ravindra, like just putting someone else there to open the batting. I think that's why I have reservations about the strength of our order.
I think the tricky part about that is that Conway's been so successful at opening. He's been doing such a great job, and I think that if you look back at the past 12 months or 18 months when people have been going, what's happening with New Zealand, we're dropping down the pecking order a little bit, is that the Conway Latham part of it's been almost the best bit.
Yeah. Well, don't even look at it from a New Zealand perspective. Look at it from opening batters around the world. Probably only in the last 18, 24 months, you've got Rohit Sharma, who's probably got a pretty decent record. But opening has been a really, really tough gig. So I think if you've got a guy that's averaging over 40 opening the batting, that's a particularly when we've seen that sort of set the tone in so many test matches in recent times, that kind of positive start. You just wonder whether you give a bit of momentum away by not having someone who he scores his runs pretty quickly at the top of the order as well, but relatively classically, right? Look, nice dilemmas to have. That you're talking about a guy who's just got a double hundred, who prior to probably the last 12 months had a pretty decent overall test record, and now you're saying, you know, a guy who's, you know, last dig. I always thought you were as good as your last dig, so he's going to feel pretty bummed if he misses out the next time he plays test cricket.
You can't take away from him. He scored 200 not out.
And he played really well.
I want to get into a little bit of bigger picture stuff with New Zealand, because we're sort of at the end of, I mean, we're going, like you said, we're going into our white ball games against Sri Lanka, but actually, like, players are going off to the IPL. These are going to be two squads that are certainly depleted from our top 11. So I do want to dive into kind of where we are, New Zealand cricket sort of spot, but I guess just touching on bits and pieces from that game. The other two sort of players that we'd kind of had question marks over was the Blair Tickner spot. So any thoughts on his performance? I actually I found it very interesting how he fit into that bowling attack in a different role without Wagner there. He sort of took that role, and I actually thought he kind of did a reasonable job. And you know, he's not Neil Wagner. He wasn't Neil Wagner. He wasn't able to do the exact same thing, but in that role he looked like a much better fit in our bowling attack than he had in that whole summer so far.
Yeah, I think probably bar one spell he bowled at Mount Maunganui, I thought looked pretty good when everyone seemed to be going short, and he actually came in and
bowled a hard length
with Kugel line for a period of time and looked pretty good. But yeah, to come on and, you know, I'm pretty sure you were bowling to Were you bowling to 7-2 leg side field at one point?
Except we were.
Oh, certainly. I don't know what the rules are around that, but yeah, certainly it had a feel of.
Definitely the leg side theory.
It had a bit of body line in it, didn't it?
Yeah.
And did it, you know, did a really good job. And that was going to be one of my questions for you is really that we talked a little bit about those batting depth charts for you. Have you learned something from this game with Bracewell and probably Tickner being asked to do a little bit more about what maybe the next 18 months looks like for your test side?
Well, I think it's so tricky. Yeah, I mean, this kind of segues us into that conversation because Bracewell is another one, that there's been question marks over. And mainly I think the question marks are what are his role? Like what, you know, if he's going to play at seven, he's got to get some runs or he's got to be, you know, a frontline spinner. And he's not kind of either of those two things at the moment. He's, you know, obviously didn't get a chance to get runs in this test. I think we've learnt that those guys can be adequate. I don't mean that, and I actually don't mean that in a mean way. I mean that like those guys are okay. I just don't think either of them are going to be world beaters at test level.
Mm.
I think Tickner certainly took strides. I think that's really encouraging. But yeah, I mean, you want to carry on?
Well, I actually think that's actually a really good way to sum that up. They've been adequate at home, but they're still behind the likes of Jameson. Even, you know, you think about guys like we don't have in our team, like Bolt.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about the fast bowlers, Milne, Ferguson and Sears, you know, these people who are probably and ahead of him. And, you know, when Blair Tickner got that role or got that call up for the English series, it was in England, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. I was really surprised to see that he got that ahead of someone like Jacob Duffy, who is also in the wings there waiting to come in. And he probably carry more of a new ball role than Blair Tickner would. But in New Zealand, adequate, great. What happens when we go out to the subcontinent? What happens when you go to Australia, South Africa? I'm just not sure how they will go around the world.
I think he's been a pretty good third seamer for New Zealand, third or fourth seamer in that attack, right? I think if he's asked to lead the attack in 2 years, say you don't have Southee and you've got Henry and Tickner, that's probably not in his wheelhouse. But I think as a third seamer for New Zealand, being able to go in and do some hard work and bowl good areas and good lengths, even if he's not doing a lot with the ball, he's keeping the batter honest with the lengths that he can bowl, and we saw that in Mount Maunganui.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that he is waiting in the wings like Henry was to take Bolt's spot and become a leader of the attack just yet. I mean, he may evolve as an international cricketer and he may develop skills learning from South, and he may develop, you know, a little bit of swing or a little bit more nip off the seam, but he's certainly a reasonable, well, much better than I thought he was going to be, third seamer or fourth seamer for New Zealand in that attack that you've got. And you know, having Jamieson might even help you again, having him fill a fourth seamer role.
Well, I mean, I said it tongue-in-cheek at the start about, you know, never doubted the selectors, but I do think that this sort of, the Jamieson piece of it is actually a huge part of kind of how this development has evolved. And, you know, if you look at that squad, I think that they... Obviously, they didn't want to lose Bolt. I'm sure they went, you know, we would love to have Trent Bolt, and they obviously opted then to not pick him.
Mm-hmm.
That we've been through all of that. But you have Jameson, Henry, Southee, that none of these questions are happening. Like, nobody's worried about our bowling attack because those three are, I think, quite, you know, world-class bowlers that can be our main three. Then you either have Wagner or you have Tickner or you have someone in the hard-working role, and then you've
or you have out-and-out pace.
Yeah,
or you have a guy who can bowl 145.
You build your attack that way. And I don't think there would have been any concerns because people assume that Jameson's got, you know, 5 or 6 years to go. Henry's got a couple of years, good years left in him. So is Southee, what people hope. So I don't think that there's any concerns. But, you know, I think what this has shown this summer is that the fast bowling is the area that New Zealand doesn't have that depth. And you know, younger players that, you know, mentioned Sears before, Matthew Fisher went on the New Zealand A Tour. Those two have been just hit by injuries. We've seen Lockie, Milne, you know, all these guys that have this out-and-out pace in New Zealand, none of them can seem to stay fit. And there doesn't really seem to be, you know, all the guys that are leading the Plunkett Shield wicket charts, they're the Doug Bracewells, the Jacob Duffies, the guys that have been in the mix for a long time. And, you know, I actually thought Bracewell did a reasonable job. I think Duffy would do a decent job at test level. But he's probably your, you know, your Tim Southee replacement. He's not your, you know, he's not your Kyle Jameson replacement, if you know what I mean. Like, they're slightly different roles. So, yeah, I think that what it has exposed is the fact that that depth isn't there. You know, if you're looking at all the different areas of New Zealand cricket, I think that's the one that the alarm bells might be ringing a little bit.
Yeah. But before we move on, a word on Sri Lanka. Let's not forget they were a chance to get, pretty long chance to get into the World Test Championship final. They needed to win the series, I think, 2-0, didn't they? And yeah. Probably have some other stuff go their way. But I thought they were pretty impressive given... obviously that first innings notwithstanding, but you know, they showed some application with that second innings. Pretty much all of their batters got in. We talked a little bit about their seamers in that first that first match. You like the look of the left arm spinner as well, Joe Sarir, I think.
Oh, he's okay. And I like Dhananjaya De Silva as well. So in the bottom of the middle order.
Do we think that they come into the mix? It's kind of really, I guess, clogged up that, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth kind of spot, hasn't it, in world cricket at the moment. Obviously India and Australia will be facing off at the Oval in the World Test Championship final. South Africa must be third.
Yes, South Africa's third. Yeah, England, Sri Lanka, New Zealand, very close, kind of 4, 5, 6. I can't remember the actual. I think it might have been England, Sri Lanka, New Zealand, anyway, doesn't really matter. Those three very close in the 4, 5, 6, and I think that probably is actually quite a fair reflection on where all of those teams are. I mean, I would say New Zealand down at sixth is probably a tiny bit low, in my opinion. But actually, given the fact that it sort of doesn't necessarily matter too much.
The massive problem with the World Test Championship is that probably the best team in the world is not in the final.
England.
The best Test team in the world currently for the last 12 months is not. In the final, and that's a problem to me. And they've just the number of tests, it's just it not being equal, you know, doing it with the percentage based, you know, points to get, you know, sort out the standings, it doesn't make sense to me.
It's very difficult to get a good system, right? Because New Zealand are negatively impacted if you're only playing a 2-test series and you lose a test. That is a large percentage or a larger percentage of the tests that you play as compared to playing 7 tests in a home summer. So, you know, there are some real challenges there. And I agree, England are the form team in world cricket at the moment, and they're not going to be there.
And in this cycle, I think that England must have won more tests than some nations have played.
Yeah. Oh, like, easily.
Yep.
Yeah, look, it's difficult. I actually want to argue, but I probably can't. We need an eliminator
I do think that this is going to sound a bit silly because I want to defend New Zealand here as well, but... The proof will be in the pudding for England when they do play against Australia and when, you know, maybe when they go have a longer series against India. Obviously, they played that one test against India early, you know.
Shoehorned into the summer. India came straight from pretty much, you know, franchise leagues, etc.
Whereas they, I feel like they took New Zealand by surprise in that first 3-match series that, you know, we played against them. They beat a very poor Pakistan team. I'm disappointed that New Zealand didn't win against them. I actually think that, that they are a weak side. I'm not trying to downplay England. I do think they've played some awesome cricket. But I think, India and Australia, it's really hard to judge those three. And I mean, I think that's why, for me as a neutral, the Ashes often... doesn't have that much excitement, but this time I am kind of like,
oh, you have to be.
This is going to be good because
you have to be.
Because
it might just be shit though. It might be the worst. We might get either a massive rainstorm or just the most turgid cricket.
That would be the biggest audience letdown from Dusk Till Dawn. I think
it would. Look, we talked a little bit India Australia before we segue to that. Let's just engage our listeners and watchers now with the sports podcast awards. So our little old podcast has been nominated for a cricket award. So if you do have a couple of minutes, go and find your way to sportspodcastgroup.com. You can then navigate to awards, find your way to the cricket page, have a little dabble with the best archery podcast if you want to as well. I like a quiver full of arrows myself. But do go and find your way to the cricket
it's
awards.
Quite a good name.
Yeah,
it's a good name for a book.
I don't even know whether it is a real archery podcast or whether there's awards, but
is a book called that.
Yeah, there is. So
he doesn't know that either.
I do know that. A quiver full of, it's a Jeffrey Archer book, I'm pretty sure it is. Oh. A book of short stories, I believe. So yeah, in your face. Anyway, but look, we digress a little bit. But if you do have a minute, please go and give us a vote at the Sports Podcast.
You can use in your face as a segue.
I can in your face. So anyway, let's talk
before we do go to India, Australia.
Can you segue back to it then?
We don't need to segue back to it because basically we haven't kind of all been in the same room for a little while, and we haven't really had Raj's thoughts on New Zealand. So I'm quite keen to get your thoughts on just where New Zealand, how you're feeling about New Zealand cricket at the moment. Because I think, you know, the start of the summer, there's been a lot of negativity and a lot of we've got this aging side. You know, we can't win the big moments. We've got no depth. Like, has this summer, you know, these three wins, has it given you any more, you know, positivity, or are we still sort of a middling side that might do okay at some stage?
The win against England was an incredible performance. To turn that around and win that game from where they were, it's a great performance. And the problem with that is that I think that's a bit of an outlier. Mm. With this Sri Lankan series towards the end of the summer, it's going to paper over some cracks. And, you know, I've spoken about it with you guys and other people. I just don't think that we currently have our... What is our best 11? Do we know what that is?
Yeah.
We have Southee batting at 8 in that first test against Sri Lanka. Really annoyed me. I know it shouldn't have annoyed me so much. It really brought me down for a couple of days, him batting at 8. But I don't know what our current best 11 is. We have injuries, you know, like every team that goes through. But, yeah, I cannot accurately place us in that world championship list. We're not where we are, I don't think, but how can we argue that we're better than South Africa when we lost to them at home?
Yeah.
You know, how can we argue that we're up there with the big three when we're really probably not at this stage? Mm. That's my issue with it. I'd be interested to know your thoughts, Stu, around where we think we're going with... Are you happy with how we've gone with Southee at the helm? Has that changed anything for you? You know, Steady's performance as coach and selector, how do you think that's gone?
I think that the hard bit for out of all of this is we're not playing Test cricket again until it's December, November or December. So I feel like we've debated all this stuff, and in my head I've thought about it. I've given a lot of thought to, like, yeah, where is this Test side going? But I think by then we'll have a different coach, and we'll have, you know, potentially some different players. You know, Steady's contract runs out after that the ODI World Cup. I'd be stunned if he reapplies. I'd be stunned if, you know, they appointed him again. I think he's been at the helm for a long time. You know, I'm obviously very biased, but I think he's done a really good job. New Zealand's been really good under his stewardship with him and Larson. You know, whether the depth now is, you know, how much you put the blame on those guys and how much it's on the system or whatever, COVID, whatever you want to put it under. But in terms of kind of, yeah, where we're at, I think I'm sort of, these three wins have given me a lot of positivity, but I actually think the best part about it's actually been some of the domestic stuff and seeing some of the younger guys come through. I think there's been some really positive signs with people like Mohammad Abbas, who I mentioned last week, Reece Mariu. There's some younger batters, I think, coming through. Phillips, obviously, Glenn Phillips, you know, everyone's kind of really excited about him. And so I think there's enough depth in New Zealand cricket. We've seen the A side get named today, and Adi Ashok's in that side. And, you know, we've still got Ajaz, who, you know, I don't think the door should be shut on someone like him. He's, you know, he's got 10 wickets in an innings.
How can you shut a door on a guy who got 10 wickets in an innings?
So I think you can shut a door on a guy that's got 200 in his last innings as well.
Mm. But yeah, I think there are lots of different parts of New Zealand cricket, and if you're building your Test side, I think there are, you know, certainly there's depth in a lot of those positions. It's the seamers that I am worried about, and yeah, what this team looks like in you know, that by the time we go to Bangladesh, it'll look completely different. But then, you know, next summer is when we have the challenge. We've got two tests against South Africa, two tests against Australia at home. That'll be when we find out where the side is, because it's a year gone.
And just to kind of end it on a positive note, you know, you've always said over, you know, the last 5 years, the cycle we've been through, New Zealand's always done what they need to win the game.
Mm.
And that has been really good to see over the last three tests, is that we've done what we have to turn that test around and to eke out that win against Sri Lanka in that first test, which got very exciting down at the pub, I tell you.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of celebrations.
Yeah, there, so people lost things in the excitement.
I lost my wallet.
Forgot where they were and all sorts of things. It was fantastic.
I found it.
Fantastic.
I look for it. But yeah, I just think that's good. From a positive point of view, we're doing what we need to win, which is back to what we have been doing over the last 5 years.
That was a very long segue.
Yeah, sorry, Ben. You said last week you were amazed at the fact that I can always throw it back to New Zealand. So,
and domestic and New Zealand domestic cricket.
I've got a few domestic names in there for you. So, you know, we can move now to the, you know, this boring, you know, limited overs series in a different country if you like.
I've got that on my Stew Lipshaw bingo, domestic New Zealand cricket. I've got that centre square, so I'm on track here.
Yes. Michael, let's have a little chat, you and me, for a minute, shall we? Yeah, look, I guess the test matches are now finished. We're rapidly into those
meaningless ODIs.
Meaningless ODIs in the lead up to the to the 50 over World Cup.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. October.
I thought you were going to say in the lead up to the exciting IPL.
Well, there is that. The thing I find really fascinating is we're not that far away from that World Cup. They still haven't announced the dates yet, have they?
I think it's September.
No, they've announced when it is, but they've got no grounds, no fixtures, no detail. But yeah, I guess the first two ODIs, a couple of bowling performances of note. I think Ravi Jadeja was man of the match in the first game, but Shami knocked the top off the Australian order to probably set that up. And then Mitchell Starc, I don't know how much of that game you saw, but 1 minute I think Mitchell Johnson was talking about how bad his radar was, the ball wasn't swinging, he didn't know where his wrist was, and then all of a sudden it's curtains.
He found it very quickly.
Again, we touched on the commentary, didn't we? I think on the New Zealand stuff. I've got to say, it gets worse the later you watch cricket.
I think the more you say on TV, the more often you're wrong. I think the problem with bold predictions on television is that, you know, people like us watch it and then
we shouldn't be recording this podcast.
We should go back to just doing this in the pub with the microphone off. Look, I think Australia have found the answer to life after David Warner at the top of the order, at least in their white ball cricket sides. Travis Head, I really, really like at the top of the order, and I've been, you know, no secret that I've done that for some time. But Mitchell Marsh at the top of the order, even if you're going back to the T20 World Cup where he batted at three and you know, occasionally has opened for Australia, has been a real success. A great left-hand, right-hand combination. I think they bat very, very well together. And of course, in that second ODI, when they chased 117 or 120 odd none down, they really kind of dominated proceedings. I really like Mitchell Marsh at the top of the order. The Australian selectors, Ronald McDonald and co, have made no secret that they want to have as many all-rounders as possible in their side. You know, there's a possibility that Cameron Green plays in that ODI side at some point and bats at number eight to give them as many batting and bowling options as possible. So, you know, having Marsh, Stoinis, Maxwell and...
even Abbott to an extent.
And Abbott can bat. Cameron Green, sorry, Raj.
Is Ashton Agar there? I'm not sure.
I don't think I've seen Ashton Agar in this series.
Even Cummins is
even Cummins can bat, so, you know. Look, Australia have got lots of options. I think in the same way that 2 years ago, leading into the T20 World Cup, we're still kind of figuring out what our best combinations are, how we reintegrate David Warner, given the form that he's in and how well Head and Marsh have done in his absence. Yeah, I don't know how you reintegrate Warner into the team, but there's certainly lots to like from a depth perspective, and we haven't even touched on the fast bowling yet other than Starc.
Can I just quickly ask, is Mitchell Marsh, I guess he's good now, just is that just a thing that's going forward? Because I in my head I have just still, you know, I still have him as not good. Do I have to change that, or
you do need to change that? He is good at cricket.
It was that previous World Cup, wasn't it, really, where he batted three in UAE, where he really burst onto the scene those kind of pitches.
Yeah. The 12 months before that, though, when Australia had all of their players out, Smith out, Cummins out, and all the rest of it, and they were kind of experimenting with different lineups, he batted at three most of that 12-month period and did really well, earned his spot, and then did really, really well at the World Cup. So, and he's just gone on from strength to strength from there. I mean, he's not bowling at the moment, I don't think, or bowling very, very little, but does have that string to his bow as well.
There's just so many variables, isn't there? I think a lot of teams seem to be doing this now with trying to get as many all-rounders in. If you look at even England through this one day and T20 series against Bangladesh, they've kind of not called up players that you thought, well, hold on, so-and-so is injured. They've gone, nah, we'll just bump Sam Curran up. We'll bump Moeen Ali up. We'll bump the all-rounders up the order, because I think obviously they want that depth in that 50-over World Cup. And it's, you know, it seems to be a little bit of a way of trying to essentially say that probably players that are used to their roles and can attack for longer is going to be the option for mm-hmm. that 50 over tournament. We've got the IPL in the middle, which could change things from an injury perspective. So,
and a form perspective, you know, players have found and lost form in the IPL over the years as well. So, you know, there's lots to like and watch about that IPL tournament in the lead up to the World Cup, and you know, players could emerge. You know, we're going to see Tim David in the World Cup. We're going to see a bunch of Australians performing there as well, as you know, English and a couple of New Zealanders.
And the final one day are tomorrow, 22nd of March, played mm-hmm. in Chennai. So, any predictions, Bordy, or do you think it's
I've got no idea. Absolutely none. But like, Australia could get beaten by 10 wickets. It wouldn't surprise me in the least. It's such a lottery at the moment between this Australia and India side. And it tends to be that one side will get on top of the other and dominate. We saw that in the Test series, right? One side gets on the top and dominates and gets a resounding win. And then the next game, the other team finds itself on the front foot and they can assert their dominance over the other. So
what about just talking about the Indians, what about Sky? Everything seems to have changed.
It's fallen.
3 months, 4 months ago, he was the greatest batsman on the planet, and now they want to drop him. So I don't know what's going on there.
I mean, he's got a couple of good cherries early on in his innings, and you know, I think Greg Chappell went through a phase where he scored like 0-0-1, 0-0-1. He kind of a binary phase, and someone asked him if he was out of form, and he said, "I've got no idea. I haven't been in long enough to figure it out." So I think there is an element of that with Sky. You know, he hasn't been long enough in to get out of form because he's just been getting some pretty good deliveries early doors, and he got a good one the other day as well.
Two golden ducks in a row.
So you know, there's not a lot you can do about that. Sometimes you get a good cherry doors.
Exactly, and smash it straight to point.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it, though, with him, because it seems like the T20 seems to be so much better than the 50 over for him. Like, I've never really understood how, like, why that happens or how it happens, but it keeps coming true because, and if you look, I mean, if you look at his ODI numbers, they're just nothing compared to his T20 stats.
Well, before Lippy finds a way to bring this back to New Zealand domestic cricket, we've seen a retirement today. Tim Payne has announced his retirement from
all formats.
Want to give a little bit more Australian content to the podcast before we get back to New Zealand stuff.
No prepared remarks on Tim Payne.
Any unprepared remarks?
I mean, he's been a tremendous servant for Australian cricket when they really needed a leader to step up in the aftermath of the South Africa scandal. He probably won't go down as the most talented Australian captain ever from a batting point of view or a wicket-keeping point of view, but you know, he was able to take a culture forward and take a team forward that was in tatters after that Cape Town incident. So from that perspective, he was, Raj, forgive me if I get the Batman quote wrong, but he was the hero that Australia needed but didn't deserve or something like that. I've got that horribly wrong, I'm sure.
Something along those lines.
But yeah, I mean, he will go down as one of Australia's better glovemen, I think, from a purist wicket-keeping perspective. He's an excellent, excellent wicket-keeper and probably deserved to play in that Australian side for a lot longer. You know, that devastating finger injury kept him out for several years as well. So, he was a great servant to Australian cricket when we really needed him, and I think that's what he'll be remembered for.
Are you going to look back on his career and think how much that finger injury impacted him? Because he scored 100, didn't he? And then he hurt his finger.
90, I think he got 90.
And then he didn't come back for
a long time. Years and years and years. It took him ages to get back.
His debut was at Lords in that test against Pakistan, wasn't it? Where they played it on neutral.
It was a long time ago. Yeah. And he burst onto the scene quite early and then was out for ages and ages and ages. And then, you know, other wicketkeepers came in and had a bit of a crack, Neville and Haddon and so forth. So.
Did you hear how he informed Cricket Australia that he was...
Did you send him a text message?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
I think it was a WhatsApp, I think. Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. Moving on.
Before we get ourselves in trouble.
Lippy.
Allegedly.
We want to talk about Sophie Devine. So this women's IPL or Whipple or women's Premier League, I don't know what the official moniker is, has been fantastic viewing. We've seen some really high scoring games. This one, Gujarat against the RCB, no exception to that. I think notable also I think the fastest delivery speed gunned in women's cricket.
Ooh, Elise Perry. How fast?
135 or something.
Holy shit.
So a couple of, I guess, milestones in that, but I think we've got to talk about that 99 and also picked up a wicket as well, I think, in that game, in a victory that where they chased down 189 in 15 overs.
Holy
which
shoot.
Is pretty pretty good.
Honestly, if listeners have not seen the highlights, like, you will not see a better T20 innings than that Sophie Devine inning. I mean, yeah, 99 off 36 balls kind of says all you need to say. But, I mean, yeah, she hit some enormous, enormous sixes, 94 metres with, I think, one of the sixes. I mean, it's sort of, I feel like it's sort of belittling when they go on about it in the commentary, but Harsha Bogley was just, they were just kind of going, oh, I don't need to bring the boundaries in for Sophie Devine, but it's, which is sort of a bit ridiculous, but she honestly was just, she was hitting them up into the rafters. It was an amazing, amazing innings. And like you say, they were chasing a big score and it was sort of over. You know, it was over after 10 overs. She'd put the game beyond doubt. And I mean, yeah, I don't want to dive too deeply into the actual run of the tournament because it's, you know, IPL kind of that tournament setup. It's it, in a day's time when people are listening to this,
it'll be completely different.
It'll be a little bit out of date. But, you know, RCB has struggled a little bit in this tournament really early on. They struggled a lot.
Amelia Kerr played well, though, I think, at the beginning.
She's, yep. So Mumbai's going well. That Mumbai side, yeah.
Yeah, they did really well at the auction, didn't they? I mean, yeah, they've obviously got Nat Siver-Brunt is going pretty well. Izzy Wong, from an English perspective as well, coming. Yep. She's actually batting up the order and bowling rapid. Hit of six off her only ball in that first game. So they did really, really well at the auction. So yeah, Delhi and Mumbai at the top of the table, I think.
Yeah, and that Delhi side, oh, we talked about them a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, that, you know, that top order that they possess is, you know,
reasonable.
It's unreal. So yeah, I mean, I would, you know, I still think they're the side that I would be looking at. You know, when I look at T20 sides, it's always that top three. If you have a powerful top three, basically you can just win any game, and I think that's what Sophie Devine showed. I mean, I think people were pretty stoked with RCB's draft when they, you know, I remember logging on, you know, to the social media after that draft, and everyone was kind of going, oh, they got they picked up Elise Perry and Sophie Devine, and, you know, on and on and on, and you know, hand them the trophy now, they've won. And then they, you know, kind of how it goes, isn't it? Kind of how it goes with RCP, unfortunately, as well. I did see, you know, Virat was in there the other day, kind of giving them an inspirational talk. So maybe that helped turn things around. But yeah, look, I mean, like you say, it's been a really fun tournament. It's sort of, in some ways, it's the same as the IPL. It's on, you know, so late at night for us, and with all the other cricket going on in our summer, it's hard to catch every single ball, but it's been fun. And look, like we talked about a few weeks ago, I think it's going to be great for women's cricket and awesome for India. It's, you know, their depth is just going to go through the roof. Well,
we've seen it with their men's side over Absolutely. The last 4 or 5 years, right? So it's going to do the same thing.
Before we wrap up, Lippy, any Riccarton news or anything you want to run through on the run sheet before we wrap up?
I can't believe you opened that door for him.
Yeah, that's a dangerous game.
What about Bracewell?
Bracewell's RCB gig as well. Yeah, I was quite surprised with that, to be honest. I offline had a chat with you, Raj, about it, and you didn't seem that surprised. But I he's been pretty inconsistent for New Zealand. I know, you know, I just think there are, I think there are better T20 players out there. I'm surprised that he kind of got this gig. I think it's fantastic for him.
It's a little bit of a form pick, though, right? Whether or not his actual form is there or not, he's playing three formats. That fantastic, what was it, 140 odd.
Against India in India.
That's all he, forget about all his other performances, just that one has gotten him the gig.
And yeah, probably.
That's fine. What's wrong with that?
Absolutely.
You know, Mike Hessen's at that, you know, is it involved there as well? So, you know, I'm sure there's a bit of that.
And I'm sure it's about how he might go in the squad as well. And I think obviously they have that kind of pretty decent old boys network, don't they, from a New Zealand cricket perspective in and around that IPL.
In a good way, in a positive way.
No, in an absolutely positive way. And I think that, you know, they obviously talk to each other. How would he go in this environment? You know, is he going to kind of add to it and enjoy it and get the experience from it? And I think if you look at it now, that's the way teams are going to go, to get their players that level of experience. When for New Zealand, they don't play enough international cricket, particularly, you know, test match. He's probably going to learn more from that than he is from, you know, playing, as harsh as it sounds, first-class cricket or domestic one-day cricket in New Zealand, isn't it?
Well, I think that's the huge positive out of all of this. Yeah. I think he will be an important part of our ODI World Cup squad. You know, what kind of role he ends up playing in that team, who, you know, I'm not quite sure of just yet. But, you know, the fact that he's going to be over there for a month, 6 weeks or whatever it is, learning those conditions in those, you know, in those stadiums, in the noise and in all of that, soaking all that up, learning the pace and the areas that you need to bowl on those pitches.
Developing your spin bowling, there's probably nowhere better to go.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's great for New Zealand cricket. I'm just surprised, I guess, that he got picked up, but fantastic.
Awesome.
Anything else? Any other business?
The other thing I did find interesting was in T20 league news is this Major League Cricket. I did think that was quite a...
Oh, that's newsworthy.
A newsworthy little point. And, I mean, New Zealand listeners will be kind of fascinated to see Corey Anderson, really, is the big thing for us.
Is he living over there or something? Yeah,
yeah. His wife's American, so he's been over there for quite a while. And... he's sort of been in the setup of these sides for the franchise stuff in America for a little while. I actually had talking about Rickon, and
What
was that? You're breaking up.
able to talk to Cole McConkie the other day about when they were here playing, Canterbury was here playing Auckland, and talked to him about he's been over to the US sort of playing in some of the franchise stuff over there and talked it up, said it was very, very impressive. And, they're hosting the 2024 T20 World Cup.
Joint World Cup with the West Indies, yeah.
Yeah, although I did see some, I don't know, apparently fake news that they'd been stripped of the rights, but that sounds like it was fake news anyway. It's another social media blow up. But yeah, it's going to be pretty fun, I think, to watch this. And there's a lot of, like, the whole bunch of Aussies. Cricket Victoria's signed up with one of the franchises, so there's Finch, Mitch Marsh, Stoyness, there's De Kock, there's Norkia,
Smith,
Hasaranga,
Liam Plunkett's
there as well.
He's living in America at the moment, is he not?
American
as well?
Wife, yeah, as well, yeah. I think. Yeah.
But the ECB has said no to ECB contracted players. I have seen that today.
Right.
But anyway, I in general, not a huge fan of every single country in the world having a T20
what
league.
What are the grounds
like?
Have you seen, or you haven't seen anything about that?
Not
one of the grounds
part
in Florida is actually, well, it's an international standard ground, isn't it? And I think that there's plans to build more and more. And I'll probably get this stat wrong, but I think in terms of participation, the USA is the second largest nation after India in terms of participation.
There is lots of participation in America. And they've spread out the franchises, right? So I've got it here. Six teams: Dallas, San Francisco, New York City, Seattle. And that's Sachin Nadella's involvement, heavy investment from him. So there's some big backing in terms of this league. There's some really big American businessmen getting behind it. Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. So there's big markets in there as well, right? So there's big money markets in New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and also, you know, kind of Dallas and Seattle. And then there's a
lot of air miles there.
Yeah, lots of travel. July 13 kicks off, and the season draft was March.
Should have been
19th.
July the 4th. They've missed a trick there.
Well, they have. But yeah, that stadium in Dallas has 7,000 seats, I think, according to their own website.
I think when they were trying to get it up and running a while back previously, they talked about playing them in like baseball grounds and stuff like that. But I'm not sure if.
No, I think they actually have built some proper cricket grounds. So I think the investment's there. And I guess it's given it a nudge, particularly with a lot of the expatriate communities that they've got in some of those places for, you know, club cricket and whatnot. I think it's fantastic. Who would bet? We were talking about this in terms of a FIFA World Cup perspective when the USA will win one of them. Maybe in 10 years' time, we might be talking about it from a cricketing perspective.
Let's see. It's a sleeping giant. Right, there's so much potential in the United States in all sorts of sports. So let's see what happens there. I mean, we've seen football come a long way since the development of Major League Football soccer football.
Yeah. Well, boys,
probably enough for now.
Enough for now.
Yeah. He's trying to finish, and you keep interrupting.
We'll talk about Ted Lasso later. But look, for those of you watching on YouTube, please do stick around for the awkward moment where we have to turn off the recording and jump over a few cables, etc. For those of you listening on the podcast feed, we hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. We will, of course, be back next week with more cricketing news, views, and we've also got interviews lined up over the course of the New Zealand off season. Just a quick plug again: get yourself to sportspodcastgroup.com. Give us a vote to win Cricket Podcast of the Year against some former international players, pundits, and other cricketing dignitaries. You can vote for us for Muppets as well whenever you like. But for now, it is good night and God bless from us all here in Auckland. It's been great being back in the same room. Boys, welcome back to Raj, and congratulations on the arrival of baby number 3.
Thank you.
You're looking pretty well.
under the eyes for that.
Yeah, it was quite hard work, actually.
But look, we will end it on that on that note. Good night and God bless from us all here in Auckland. We'll see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.